everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Heart Podcast. I'm Bria.
And I'm Kim.
And today we have a very special episode with a very special guest, and we are so happy she took the time out of her busy schedule to come talk to us all this week. Let us introduce Miss Annie Blay.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. I'm so amazed and just proud of you guys for getting this podcast up and off the ground. A little bit about me. I actually went to high school with Kim and Bria, but we were, I think, a year apart. A year, maybe two, I don't remember. I think a year. And we went to a really, really big high school. So we never really even, I don't even think I ever met you guys when I was in high school, but I've since graduated high school a while ago. And I went to Syracuse University and I studied magazine journalism with a minor in information management and technology. And I was there for 3.5 years. And after that, I moved back home to New Rochelle, which is in Westchester, New York. And I just started working. I did a few things when I first got home, but I've held positions at Bustle, at Elle, at Mode Operandi. And now I'm currently the associate beauty editor at The Zill Report, which is owned by Bustle. So yeah, that's me.
Amazing. Literally so accomplished. So we're so excited to engage in a little conversation just about post-grad life and some of your experiences. So with that, we will get started with the first question. So Annie, can you tell us briefly about your college experience at Syracuse, and more specifically, what was it like being a Black woman pursuing journalism at one of the top schools in the country?
Yeah, so I feel like anytime people ask me how I liked Syracuse, I rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, and I say 4. I didn't love it. I really didn't. And I think it's important for people to acknowledge when they didn't love their experience in college, because I know a lot of people who downplay it and just say that they had a great time just to say that. But I'll say I liked the academics of it. I appreciated that. That's why I went to Syracuse, because I knew that I wanted to be in journalism, and they had one of the best programs in the country. But when it came to, I guess, the social aspect of the school, it's, if you don't know anything about Syracuse, it's a party school. It's a big sports school, and I was just never that person. So I didn't like that aspect of it. So I guess 4 on the side of just the school in general. But as far as the academics, I would give it a solid 7 or 8. Being a Black woman in my program was definitely daunting. I was often the only Black face in a room, or in a classroom in an org, but for some reason that didn't really faze me at all. I think the times where it did faze me would be when race was brought up, or when kind of uncomfortable conversations were brought up and I didn't really have anyone to look at in the room, so I'd have to just think to myself. But Newhouse, which is the journalism school at Syracuse, is not as diverse as it can be, but I think that's something that they acknowledge, and that's something that they've since worked on. I know it seemed a lot more diverse when I was leaving than when I came in, and so I appreciate the steps that have been taken. And I know my last semester I had a Black professor, and she was a Black woman professor, and I didn't even think I would get to see that at my time at Syracuse. So it's definitely gotten better, but it was always daunting. I think something that I always kind of understood is that this would be what the actual landscape of media looked like when I graduated. And so I was just this is what it's going to be. So might as well get used to it. But I did make a lot of great friends. Yeah, I want to say friends. I made a lot of great Black friends, a lot of great Black women friends, especially in that space. And that was really essential to me being able to just excel in my classes, to stay sane, to just enjoy the experience there. So yeah, I think that's the gist of being Black at Newhouse.
Number one, I just have to say thank you for being incredibly real, because the amount of people who act as though they're having the time of their life at school, And it's like a walking nightmare half the time with the things you go through and like the people you meet or just the things you experience. And I just have to applaud you for giving it a 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think people say college is supposed to be the best 4 years of your life. I never believed that. Like, I always knew that the height of my life was not going to be these 4 years where I get no sleep and like I'm like sad every day because I have class. Like, I was like, how could this possibly be the best 4 years? I'm like, either people's lives suck after or y'all just went to a different college, because that was not Syracuse for me. I was like, there's no way this is the best of life, because if it is, just end it now.
Right, like we're done here. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I also think it was really important what you said about, you kind of realized that the dynamic or like the demographic of your classroom is going to essentially mirror the field that you're going into. I think that's just such a hard, cold reality sometimes. And I think you recognizing that and kind of like preparing yourself in advance is so important. And just kind of like preparing yourself for the future. So while there are these strides, to like diversify classrooms and diversify spaces, I think just also being very realistic about what you're walking into is, I think, an expectation that all Black women have to really grapple with.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess we should go to our second question, which is, through social media alone, since we don't really know you on a personal level, but we know you tangentially and all of those things, we have been able to see some of your amazing accomplishments just scrolling through Twitter, seeing your Instagram stories, and we wanted to just talk to you about your writing opportunities and what it feels like breaking through in like the fashion and beauty journalism world, because it's just been really cool to see.
Thank you. It feels like a dream realized. That's like the best way I can describe it. I've known that I wanted to do this since I was about 12. And there was really it's a mixed bag of feelings, because in a way I'm not surprised, because I feel like I've worked toward this. And I never, let me not say never. There was really only one point in my life where I thought maybe this is not gonna happen. But other than that, like, I always knew that this would kind of come to fruition for me. But as far as my writing opportunities, I didn't give myself any time to like wait or to just, how do I put it? I feel like a lot of people will spend most of their high school or college career, you know, waiting for like when I graduate, when I do this, like when I get out. And I was just way too anxious about the future. And so I actually started writing my junior year of college. I got an opportunity to write at Pop Sugar, and I was freelancing as if I were like, you know, a full blown adult freelancing, while also like handling, I think it was like 19 credits at the time. And people looked at me like I was insane. I looked at me like I was insane.
That is insane.
I didn't have time. Like, there's some weeks where I was just like, I don't even understand how I'm doing this, but I was intent. Like, I was very intent. I was very, I feel like ambitious isn't the word, but I just like, I wanted to so bad. So I made it work. And I think that was really the catalyst, is because when I graduated, it's like my resume already kind of looked like I had years of experience outside of school. That's because I was doing that experience while I was also doing my coursework. And so from Pop Sugar, I went on to freelance just like a bit here and there. I did some stuff for Elle. I did some stuff for Coverture. It's all in the fashion, beauty, lifestyle realm. I landed back at Bustle for a month, which is, I don't tell people that because it sounds crazy. I was only there for a month. And then, circled back to, and I was at Ebony for a summer, which was fun. And then I circled back to my role now, where I actually don't write as much as people would think. I actually don't write at all. Like, I barely write, which I like and love. But yeah, that's really like my writing experience, all of that, how I got to have the job that I have now. I don't even really attribute it to like hustle or ambition. I think it sounds cliche, but I have like no other way to explain it. I only attribute it to God. Like, I had a dream, and God just kind of was like, yeah, we're gonna get you to where you want to be.
I think that's so beautiful. And you know, I think throughout our lives and everything we've done, Bri and I definitely have also relied on God and seen him as somebody who is literally just making it happen. Like, looking back over time, being like, I don't know how that happened. All I know it was God, because I like blacked out in the moment. And next thing you know, there's just so many amazing opportunities. So I think that's really incredible. And also, just one follow-up to that, did you feel like once you got your foot in the door of Pop Sugar, from there, it just became so much easier to, you know, start writing for other magazines?
Yes, but also no. So what I will say is yes, because the industry's small, so you kind of end up knowing people. Also, I feel like bylines are the currency of journalism. Like, people just want to know where you've written, how much you've written. That's your credibility, almost more than, I guess, like a paper resume. Is just like, people want clips, they want samples, they want to see evidence that you know how to write. So I think that made it easy to then, you know, go to other places like, this is what I've written. Like, so like, you know, to give the evidence. I think the thing that made it maybe hard is that Pop Sugar is one of those sites that kind of runs the gamut of things that they write about. They write about everything. And I feel like some publications that I aim to write for after kind of saw that as like a, like they were just a bit more niche. And so to them, it was just like Pop Sugar. And I was like, I know. But again, it's all about the actual work and me being able to be like, you know, but like, I know it sounds like, you know, it's not a great thing, but it's just also finding a way to spin it. So I would just spin it into saying like, I know that you are solely luxury fashion and beauty, but I've written about all of these things, and that goes to say I can write about anything that you need me to write about. So yeah, I think I answered your question. I don't even remember what it was.
No, you did. You definitely did. Just about like, you know, if one opportunity at Pop Sugar was able to like spiral into the rest. So I think you answered that so well. And now, getting into our third question, can you talk to us a little bit about your transition to post-grad life? I know that's something that Bri and I are forced to think about as we're gonna now enter our last semester of undergrad, which is insane. But yeah, what was that transition like for you? And do you feel like you are a different version of yourself?
Post-grad life, it's not easy. It's, I don't know. So when I came home, I graduated a semester early. So I'll also give the disclaimer that my experience of post-grad life is in the context of a pandemic. So it's just 10 times worse than I'm sure people who have not had to deal with that. But I came home in December. It was the dead of winter and also a pandemic. So the immediate feelings were just a lot of anxiety coming back from having a world of freedom, having my own apartment, having, you know, all of that, and then coming back, moving back home with my mom. I love my mom, but, you know, kind of being back in close quarters definitely brought about feelings of just restriction and just feeling like a loss of freedom, a loss of identity. I remember telling one of my friends when I was really kind of in the thick of just all of the emotion, is that I feel like I was coming back to a place that I had grown out of. Like, I went to college and I grew and I blossomed and like I turned into this person that I wasn't before, and I was being forced to come back to this space that I grew out of. You know, I just, it's like wearing a shoe that doesn't fit, you know. It's just painful and it's uncomfortable. So that's what it felt like for a minute. And then on top of that, I was job hunting. So I mentioned before that there wasn't really any time that I didn't think that this dream would come into reality. But the one time I did is when I came home and I was applying and I wasn't getting what I wanted. It's funny because my friends and, you know, my family would look at me and like, but you got offers. But I'm a very particular person. And so I wasn't getting the offers I wanted. And I remember there was like one day where I locked myself in my room, like in the dark, and just applied to like so many like jobs I knew I didn't even want to do, because I just got like a panic of like, what if this is my reality? Like, what if this 2-bedroom apartment with my mom is my reality? Like, what if this is just it? And I was also seeing friends who had either graduated before me, because they also graduated early, or seeing people who had graduated the year before me, like who were older than me, like in these big title jobs at big title companies, making big salaries, making moves. I had friends who moved right out of college who moved to other states. And I just felt so like stuck. I just felt so stuck and like I didn't have control over my circumstances. And the worst part of it all is that December is kind of like a hiring freeze period just because people go on holiday, people go on vacation. So I was applying all these things, not hearing back. And then I remember, well, like nobody's answering their email on December 18th. Like I know now I'm like not answering emails in December, especially when it comes to things of like interviewing and all of that. And so December, I remember literally like a year, this like a year from now, like last year, that doesn't make sense, but was just like one of the hardest times in my life. And then come January, I started getting responses again and life started to get better, but I can definitely describe it as ebbs and flows. Like it's just ups and downs. One month, everything's going really well. Another month, you're just in the depths. I also had to deal with a lot of, I'd made a lot of close friends in college. I'd made two really close friends in college. It's not a lot, it's literally two. Two really close friends in college who both live in DC. I had to deal with not seeing them every day, not, you know, being around them. And then again, just the idea of like coming back to a place where I'm now a different person is like, I'm fortunate to still be very close friends with the friends I had in high school, but I was also navigating those friendships now being a different person. And sometimes even feeling like, do these people even know me anymore? Do I know them? Like, yeah, we stayed in contact throughout college, but you know, do they see the growth? Like, do they see who I am now? Do they want to be friends with who I am now? Do I want to be friends with who they are now? It almost felt in a way that we had to like get to know each other again, which was like, there's a lot of discomfort in that. Yeah, and then I guess on top of all of that, it's just the general anxiety of anxiety, like anxiety that's not tied to anything, anxiety that's just like you wake up and you feel like something's wrong, you don't know what it is. And so having to deal with that, that all sounds very negative and sad and depressing, but the silver lining, I guess, is that post-grad life also offers you an opportunity to be more intentional about who you are, who you want to be, who you want to surround yourself with. And I think anytime that you have like a junction in your life where you're given an opportunity to be intentional is a good thing, even if it's uncomfortable. And so I just had to be intentional about the people I wanted around me. I had to be intentional about myself and the routines that I was, you know, upholding, whether or not I wanted to be the same person I was in college, whether I wanted to, you know, just making these decisions, but also having to be intentional about it, I think was a really good thing to go through. It was a catalyst for growth. It pushes you to just be who you've been saying that you want to be, but like now you actually have to like put in the work to be that person. And then it's also just a world of opportunity. Like, you know, job hunting sucks, yeah, but then it's like you get to think about finding a job, like working in a field that you've probably been dreaming of, you know, for years. And for some people, it's going to be moving out of state, moving away from home. That's scary, but it's also super exciting. I know for me, one of those things, like I came home and my mom was like, my mom who'd been telling me my entire life not to date was now like, did you meet anyone in college? What's it looking like? And I'm like, no, girl, it's not looking like that. So like, that's another added thing, but like people come out and now, you know, it's like, maybe this is now your chance to date the way that you weren't able to in college, meet people that you feel like you weren't able to meet in college. If you're the type of person who really, really, really enjoyed college, post-grad is probably going to suck for you. And I know those people who like college was their best 4 years and now they're struggling and they're reposting like snaps and videos of college every like week. And it's like, ugh. But then it's like, there's a good handful of people where it's like, if you struggled in college, like this is the bit of hope that I can offer you is that post-grad actually is like there's a world of opportunity for happiness, for growth, for peace, for all of that you couldn't find in college. Like there's space for that after. That was a mouthful. I'm sorry.
I needed to hear that.
Needed to hear that. I'm like, you're saying that it's depressing. This is probably one of the most helpful, uplifting like things I've heard in a while. Like the fact that it is such a raw conversation and you're just laying it all out on the table and not holding back is something that I think everyone listening to this can take from. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are you guys a year out? Are you guys seniors?
We're seniors. Yeah. So It's like a bittersweet feeling. I know Kim and I have talked about this, but it's that bittersweet feeling of there was things about our college experience that we don't like. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know exactly what my rating for my school is, but it's not 10 out of 10. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not 10 out of 10. And I don't know what post-grad is going to look like, especially after just going through transformative things in my life this year. Mm-hmm. No idea what I'm going to do. And I think that this conversation is making me take a deep breath in a good way. And see that, you know, there's hope, there's light on the other side, even when you come back to your childhood room and you feel those same teenage angsty feelings.
The walls are pink, you have an extra poster on your door. It's a lot.
Not walls of pink.
Yeah, walls are pink, girl. But what I will say too is I think you guys will appreciate this, and I hope that people who are listening will appreciate this, is that for me, I feel like that time like between December and like I guess now even was like I've never seen God move or work in my life the way that he did. And it's just like any discomfort, any suffering, any pain is just, it's never what God wants. He never wants to inflict pain on people on purpose, but the thing is that you can always find God in that, and that he'll always turn something good out of that. And so I feel like even in just those, like when I think about like certain moments where I was feeling really depressed, I was feeling really anxious, I was feeling really just down on myself, I just feel like God would always speak something into me. God would always reveal something to me about myself, about the people I was around. And I was able to find a lot of purpose in that time. Like even when I was home, I remember like one night just praying, and I was like, in a year's time, I want my own apartment. I want to wait. I didn't have a job. So I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do that. But I was just like, God, I need you to make a way. And it was just like, I'd never been able to pray with faith like that. Like I'd never been able to come to God, like I'm believing in you for this. And less than a year later, I'm in my own apartment. So I'm just like, it'll just force you to lean on God in a way that you were not able to. And then seeing what comes out of that is really like the amazing thing.
I think our next question kind of like ties into what you touched on, part of that like discomfort in post-grad and navigating friendships and relationships. So we wanted to know, like, what has community building and building a social circle outside of college looked like for you? And what are the difficulties, the challenges, or maybe the positives that have come out of that too?
Oh, okay. There are some people that you would ask this question and it would just be like all positives. I'm not that person, unfortunately. I am an only child. I'll preface by saying I'm an only child, and I'm also just a bit of an introvert. So I know people who came out of college with a group of friends, who came out with 10 plus friends. I came out with two, because those were just my, like, that was what I came out with, and I love my two friends. But I mean two close friends. I feel like I don't want any of my friends to hear this and be like, so yeah, no, two really, really, really close friends. But when I came home, one was not as like scared as I thought, because again, like my friends from high school all moved back home. So I kind of felt like I had that like support system where it's like, we're all here. They had been here a year before me, or a few months before me, because they graduated a year early, like a whole year. I graduated months early. So I feel like they welcomed me into the post-grad depression support group. And, you know, we'd hang out. We'd, you know, one of us had like her own apartment, so we'd hang out at hers, you know, cry together, drink wine together, like get through it. But then again, there would be that, at least for me, discomfort of just like, I'm not the same person I was when we were in high school. And also just this longing of just like, sometimes it's like when you've known people for so long, you start to just want to like distance, because you want to know what else is out there. You want to know if there's more. So for me, what I was expecting to happen is, when I was growing up, like all of the Black editors that I still look up to, had their like squad, like they had their little squad, which is one of the reasons I looked up to them. Like they'd go to fashion weeks together, they'd go to events together, they'd travel together. And I was like, that's going to be me. Like when I get to where I get, like, I'm going to have my squad. And And then I got there and I didn't. And I was just like, well, where is everyone? Like, where is everyone that looks like me? Where is everyone that's my age? Like, where is everyone? I found that I was, if usually the only Black person, and if not the only Black person, always, always the youngest. Which people always tell me is great, because it's like you're years above, like beyond where, you know, most people are, all of that. And I'm grateful for that. But it is very isolating, because it's just like everybody at my office currently is like 30 plus. Love, love my coworkers. Can't talk to them the way I talk to my friends. And then even other industry friends that I've made, like, they're great. I'm so glad for the connections I've made. Everybody's older than me. And that's not to say you can't be friends with people who are older than you, but there's just a bit of a disconnect. And so for me, finding friends and building a tribe, a circle, was definitely a point of anxiety. It's been a point of depression. Like, I'm the type of person where I self-isolate in hopes that people will reach out and be like, hey, are you okay? And then when people don't reach out, I self-isolate like more. And then I wonder why I'm lonely. And then I have to like realize like, oh, I'm like purposely doing this. Like, I'm purposely not answering people's texts and calls and FaceTimes, but then wondering like why nobody's talking to me. So that's been something that I've had to work on to get like out of my head. But there definitely have been points, and not like points recently, like weeks ago, where I would just kind of like think to myself, like, maybe I'm just like one of those people who's meant to do life just a little bit alone, who's just not meant to have a huge circle and like a huge tribe. And again, God has just had to speak against that, like, you're being dramatic. Like, you're still 22, like, you know. And just this concept of that you haven't met all the people that will love you yet has really been keeping me going, because I tend to get very hopeless. I tend to think like all that there is all that there will ever be. And I have to keep reminding myself, like, there are people whose life to them didn't start until they were like 30, you know, like that's when they met their closest friends. That's when they met their spouse. And so I've had to really hone in on that, lean in on that. And also just like lean in to the support system that I currently have. I think something else God checked me on is that not to take the people you have around you for granted just because you feel like they're not fitting into your current situation. I've had to be a lot more intentional about my friendships. People move away, people, you know, get jobs, people get boyfriends. And it's like, whereas before in high school and college, I realized like, it's easy to make friends because it's by proximity. You're just close to them. You see them every day. Post-grad, it becomes that you don't see people every day. And so if you want to maintain friendships, you have to reach out. You have to make that effort. You have to like actually sit down and have conversations. Like, I feel like this year is like the first year where I've actually had friends come to me, or I've had to go to friends and they've been like, I don't like how you did this. I care about this friendship. So like, let's talk about, you know, why you're moving like this. Why? Because like before, it's just like, we would just not care. But now it's like, if you really want this person in your life, and I've had to ask myself this, like, are you willing to put in the effort to maintain this friendship, to maintain this connection? Sometimes the answer is no, and that's really fine. Like, I've had that moment where I'm like, it doesn't make you a bad person either, but I've had those moments where I'm like, I don't want to put in the effort to maintain this relationship. And so I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to be a half-ass friend. It's okay to walk away from friendships that like, not that they don't serve you, but they just don't fit into the current narrative of who you are. It's really okay to do that. It's never any beef. It's never bad blood. It's just people will grow apart. So building friendships, building my community and all of that, it's been hard, but it's an ongoing process. Like, it's definitely not something that I'm feeling hopeless about anymore. I don't think it's something that anyone who's dealing with it post-grad should feel hopeless about. It's just going to take more intention. Like, if you find that it's not happening as quickly as you wanted to, it's probably because you're relying on old ways of thinking. As far as like when you're in college, like you're in classes, that's an easy way to make friends. You're in orgs, it's an easy way to make friends. You have a dorm, easy way to make friends. When you're in the real world, when you're post-grad, like those things, those systems don't exist. And so you're going to have to go outside of yourself to reach out. Like, I've had to like DM people on Instagram, like, hey, do you want to grab coffee? It's disgustingly awkward, but you have to do it. Like, you have to do it if you want to kind of make those connections. And yeah, it all works out.
Wow. I just love everything that you said. Everything from, I think, being intentional about your relationships. So also this idea that when we graduate, it will, our life will not be this big picture perfect scene where you have all your friends and everything is perfect and defined in the way you want. I think so many times that like is romanticized. And then also too, I think people often think that like by age, like you said, like 22, 23, you'll have it all together. You'll have your groove. You'll be where you're at in your industry. And I think you're just pointing out that's just not the case for most people. Right. And that there's still so much growing to do. There's still so much love and support you're going to find in people you haven't even met yet. And I think even for me in like my final year of college, like so much of that is already being made evident, right? Like intentionality with friendships and, you know, who you spend your time with, that's has become so clear. So I think to know that that is also what's going to follow during post-grad is so, so important. So with that, we are going to start wrapping up. So for our final question, do you have any advice you want to impart on to graduating Black women?
Think to graduating Black women specifically, take the time to really plot out what you want, get to know yourself in like a way that you haven't before. I spent a lot of time journaling. I feel like if by nature, I just like to write. If you're not a writer, like leave yourself voice notes, but spend a lot of time with yourself. Like, I feel like if college, I mean, college is not isolating for most people because you're just around a lot of people, you know, just by nature of it being like a concentrated bubble. Spend time by yourself, figure out who you are, who you want to be. You don't have to have it figured out, but just start to get to know yourself better, because when you leave the context of college, there are going to be a lot of people who are either going to try and define you by certain experiences, certain traits, or who are going to ask you to kind of define yourself rapidly in one instance. And it's important that you know who you are and able to like push against that. Find a support system. That doesn't have to be friends. For me, again, it's been my faith. So find whatever it is that's going to anchor you, that thing that's like, no matter what goes wrong, it'll be okay. Like, go back to that. I don't know how it's anything other than God for other people. I really don't know how some people are like raw dogging life without God. But for me, it's always just been like, come the absolute worst, I know I'm good. Like, I know I have God. I know he's on my side. And so just find that thing that anchors you. Find that thing that like, you know, you can always hold on to, so you don't feel like you're flailing and like floating away. And then just be hopeful, like be intentional about being hopeful, write down dreams, write down goals. And then give yourself grace for that. If they don't happen, there are other avenues. I think don't be super narrow-minded about your definitions of success or happiness. Allow yourself to think outside of, you know, the boxes that you've created for yourself. Think, be realistic is one thing. I know there are people, some people say it's like, it's impossible to dream too big. I think it's quite possible to dream too big. Be realistic with yourself so that you don't disappoint yourself, or that you don't allow other people to disappoint you. Set realistic goals, set realistic parameters, time frames. You know, things are not going to happen in a year. That doesn't mean you can't want them to, or that you can't dream for that. But set up plan A's and plan B's and plan C's and plan, like set up multiple avenues so that if one fails, and also know that failure is okay. Like nobody's really, and this is the biggest thing, nobody's checking for you like the way you think that you are. Like, no, like nobody's looking at your life trying to scrutinize it. Nobody's trying to find the holes, the things that you're sitting, you know, that you'll probably be like in your room, like, oh, I'm this, I'm that. People think that I'm behind. People think that I'm XYZ. Nobody cares. Like everybody has their own life going on. Like I promise you, nobody's like so intent on like figuring out what's wrong with you and what's wrong with your life that they're poking holes at it. Even from the standpoint of like Instagram, like nobody's actually going that deep into your stories. To don't make a facade, just live your life the way that it is, and know that everybody's living theirs as well, and nobody's preying on your downfall, but also like nobody is like scrutinizing your life as much as you are. You're always going to be your biggest critic. It's a cliche, but it's true. So I feel like just give yourself grace in that sense. And then my biggest thing has been just like run your race, like run your race. it's easy to like look into the other lane, see somebody way ahead of you, maybe see somebody behind you and allow that and make you feel better about yourself. Don't do any of that. Like 20s, I think, are a good time to just put your blinders on and just kind of run the race that's before you. Be intentional about what's in front of you and don't worry about what everybody else is doing, because the thing is, like, you really just don't know what other people are going through. I've definitely done the comparison game, like, oh, they have this, oh, they have that. I do it a lot in regards to relationships. Like, I'll see people, I'm like, they're on their fifth boyfriend. And I like, wow, can we spare one? And, but then it's like, you'll find out that, you know, it's not what it seems. And so it's just like, run your race, because everybody else has their own stuff going on. And you'll never further yourself by looking over at somebody's lane. Like, it'll probably only slow you down. So just focus on what you have going on, set goals for yourself, and just be purposeful and intentional. I think sometimes the work that needs to be done in your 20s can become mundane and like daunting, just like boring in a way. Like, there are days where I'm just like, I do the same thing every single day, but like, I find purpose in every single day. I find novelty in every single day, something new to do, something new to learn, something new to teach myself, to remind myself about, to encourage myself. And so I think I'll leave on this, is just like, you really can't depend on anybody else for your own peace or your own happiness or your own anything. And as harsh as that sounds, it just gives you more room and more time to kind of build on it yourself. And I think that just ties back to what I said about, you know, manage your expectations. Yeah, I'll leave it at that, because that sounds sad, but it's practical. Just manage your expectations.
We couldn't have like paid you to say better answers.
Right.
Like, these are things that Kim and I just talked about. Thank you, Annie, for just coming on here and being so incredibly real and honest. And like, especially your last answer, these are things that Kim and I talked about literally just yesterday. Yeah. About needing to get over ourselves, in the sense that we don't want to let any insecurities rule us into thinking that people are just, you know, over analyzing or scrutinizing. And if they are, it is what it is.
And so what?
So what?
We have to move forward.
We have to move forward. We have to live. And I think that, you know, we're just all working towards liberating ourselves and just being as free as we can be. And this conversation is just perfect to reflect on those ideas and to make that a reality. So we just really, really, truly want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, number one, to chat with us on a Friday night.
Thank you for having me. I was going to say, I know I like gave you guys the run around, but I'm sorry. Like,
I'm
very open, but today it was like, but thank you for having me.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Annie, again. And we hope to see you all next time.
Yes.
On the podcast.
Stay tuned.
We'll talk to you later.